Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome to it. Great to be with you on a Wednesday. It's Hail Varsity Radio. We're presented by Currency. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbal, and can join us today on Hail Varsity at 466-3776 or 800-825-5865. Lot to get to today. The finishing touches on signing day 2023 2.0 edition. Five more names to tell you about for Nebraska football. One late addition in DeAndre Barnes. That came through this morning. Talented corner out of Colorado. So we'll get there. We'll hear from Matt Rhule, his press conference at 2 o'clock today. And Rhule shed some more light on just philosophy and what his goals and intentions are in Lincoln. So good to hear from Rhule. Tom Brady dropped a nuke this morning, and he is done for good. Do you believe it? We'll get there and get one of his seven layers of visa protection to help out with that. Russ Hochstein, Pride of Hardington, Cedar Catholic, going to be with us in 1 hour. Great longtime NFLer and, of course, Husker offensive lineman Russ with us in 1 hour. Mike Babcock in about 20 minutes. And Evan Bland also will help put an exclamation point and go there. If you're having technical difficulties, we are putting more steroids into the hamster, apparently. Can watch and stream us. Different ways to do it. Radio is always gold. But yes, the Facebook and Twitter feed for ESPN Lincoln, the Hail Varsity YouTube channel, and the Hail Varsity Radio Twitter handle at H Varsity Radio. Find Damon and Andrew in the morning, 7 to 9, and me, Chris Schmidt, and Elijah Herbal, 4 to 6. On your way home, computer just crapped out. I had a freaking power outage before the press conference at my house here in Lincoln. I didn't know how I was going to get down to the... I was going to have to Uber because my garage is so jacked.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah, the electricity part. I can shower.
I'm like, I don't think you have an electric car, do you?
No.
Like, that doesn't seem like your style.
No. Can't afford one, first of all. Second of all, but no. So, yeah, a bit adventurous. So, if you're having technical issues with any of the feeds, do the radio thing. ESPN Lincoln, ESPN Omaha, Guardy Hastings, Grand Island, Columbus can hear us there, and the different streaming apps that you get your radio from. But yeah, we will fix the stream, allegedly. Matt, thanks for that heads up. But the here and now is about recruiting and signing day, and also Tom Brady. I know you've been wore out nationally with Tom Brady's retirement, but I'll say this. Like, I didn't expect him to retire this morning. But I didn't know if he was going to keep on playing based on how things finished with Dallas and Tampa, the way he took his cap off, tipped it to the crowd, and gave mom and dad a kiss on the cheek as he exited Raymond James, or whatever it's called now, the great pirate ship, one last time. He's not playing at Tom Brady all-pro level, but he's playing probably top five, top seven level in the NFL for quarterbacks, if we're being honest, with the right supporting cast. So I still think there are some teams that would be crazy not to coax him out of retirement. I still think he has a year. Elijah, maybe he just says, you know what, I can't play at the level I want to play at, so it's time for me to go away. And I think that is it. He knows he's limited. He's probably one hit away, one halfway season point away from his skills falling off the cliff. Maybe he's seeing that horizon versus trying to hang on. One thing about him is he's absolutely proud. He's earned all of the adulation from being kind of a no-name sixth rounder to arguably the best ever. And he's done it with teams that have no Pro Bowlers, and he's done it with teams that have Hall of Famers. That's what's special about him, is how he, in a positive way, infected the other 53 guys in a franchise, flipped New England, went to Tampa, got it handled, And then they still got to the playoffs this year when they were kind of a shadow of themselves. So thank you, Tom Brady, is how I will end it with what he provided football. Russ Hochstein will have more glorious words than me as his teammate for seven seasons in New England. Okay, Nebraska recruiting class, they come in some different levels on three rivals, 24/7, anywhere in that 25 to 28 range. The reality is 28 high school players, 11 portal guys, and 100-plus guys on scholarship. Matt Rhule, very adamant about getting to work and no break following recruiting. Here is Coach Rhule as he got things kicked off with his presser.
We're in a sprint, right? Coach Paterno used to always tell us to run scared, and we're going to sprint. Like, you know, we're not taking a break. Now the focus is just purely on the guys that are here. And as I said, there's a lot of winners on this team. There's a lot of guys that I need to do a great evaluation on to help them be the most successful they can be. Hey, should I play this position or that? What should I do? I gave the coaches a couple days off here, but you know I'm here right now. I'll be here all week, and from here on out, we're working on 2024s, we're working on 2025s, but most importantly, to your point, working on this team and getting ourselves ready to be in a good place for spring ball.
So they are going to keep grinding, right? That's the hire. That's the need. The two most important positions, aside from quarterback, your offensive and defensive line. What kind of grind can you get out of the current roster and out of the new guys you brought? You got DeAndre Barnes. He is athletic. He is fast. He has got a nose for the football. He can also catch the football. So a good get late in the session from Satterfield out of Colorado. Sua Lafutu, defensive lineman. We've kind of highlighted him on Monday because of who he played for, top high school team in California that had a national schedule, who he's practiced against, his versatility and just good size and feet coming in at 6'3", 285. So he can play in the interior, can play on the outside, but he's one of those three you need in this 3-3-5. Demarius Bell, wide out from Memphis, a guy that Mickey Joseph had his eyes on, Nebraska able to close the deal on. Special top-end talent, speed, and, of course, the ability to do all things in this route tree, right? Catch it short, go long, get over the middle, and do some things with yards after the catch. Your two Texans from Coach Wager, you have Jeremiah Charles. He is really nice after the catch, more of a shake-and-bake guy. And then Ishmael Smith-Flores, guy that's new to football. But, man, you put some pounds on him, can flex him, can do a lot of things, comes from great lineage with his dad being an Iowa Football Hall of Famer. Ishmael could be special. So those are the five you added to the work you already put in, and then all of your portal guys are here too, which is great news.
And I think following the presser today wasn't a name that was high on anyone's radar, but DeAndre Barnes, what a story that Matt Rhule told today about how Marcus Satterfield went and found DeAndre Barnes, where it's an under-recruited kid. I think his best offer was maybe BYU, which he got a week or two ago. Like one of
Wyoming
those,
and Coach Bull was in there too, yeah, but like, you're right, BYU's it.
But one of those guys that really flashed by his senior year, kind of was a late bloomer, and then you know what? All the other recruiting's already been done with this early signing day in December. You already have your guys that you've been recruiting for 2 years, and he's a guy that ends up flying under the radar, and Satterfield just kind of, I don't want to say lucks his way into him, because you make your own luck through hard work, but it was luck at the end of the day how he found him. We can hear how Rhule tells the story, because I think he'll do a better job than me, but super interesting how Nebraska lucks their way into a guy like DeAndre Barnes.
And here is Rhule, and it's really all about senior film. Are you thorough enough as a staff, as a head coach, as an evaluator, to not miss or be impatient, right? You know some guys who had great senior film? Well, Kenny Bell. You know some guys who had great senior film? Amir Abdullah. Mm. Those are two names that coaches have raved about, and they just were a little bit from a late blooming standpoint, and that, man, there's so many of those kids out there, and if you get them, the mentality is already there. You got to coach them up. But that senior film dude, That was a gold mine forever for Nebraska football.
And I mean, one of the greatest late bloomers of all time from a high school point of view was a guy that we've been spending a lot of time talking about today, Tom Brady. Didn't get his first start on varsity until, I want to say, like 10 games into his junior year, and then goes his senior year and goes and performs really, really well, earns himself an offer to Michigan. But like, one of those guys that you talk about quarterbacks now, Dylan Riley is starting on varsity as a freshman. That's what type of high-level quarterback we talk about nowadays in terms of how poured over these quarterback recruiting rankings are. Tom Brady didn't even start pretty much until his senior year in varsity as a high schooler. Like, that's craziness, and that's what this coaching staff has made a point of going and trying to find. You know what? These guys that have flown under the radar because they didn't finally pop until their senior year. And I think DeAndre Barnes kind of fits the bill of one of those guys.
Here is Coach Rhule on Satterfield and the recruitment of Barnes, the corner from Colorado.
I do like the fact that, you know, we're still old school, where a lot of teams are fly in somewhere and they'll go see three or four schools in that area. We're going to go try to affect high schools. We're going to go see 8, 9, 10 high schools. Marcus Satterfield was in Denver working on 2024s in Colorado, and as he was kind of driving by a school, and it wasn't on his list, so he called the coach, said, "Hey, can I come in?" And as he's talking to the coach says, "Hey, listen, I got this kid that's under the radar that no one really knows about, and some people are recruiting him, but I think we're missing out on him." And he signed today. DeAndre signed today, and he hits all the metrics that we look for. He's 10-6. He's smart. He's big. And so, to me, the reason why you go out and see as many schools as you do is so that when people do have a transfer, when they do have an under the radar guy, they pick up the phone and call the University of Nebraska because they know that they have relationships with the coaches.
That's huge. That's absolutely huge. And it's due diligence that you hear talked about a lot, but it's been put into action by this staff. Let's hear about some of the holes on the roster. What do you need immediate help with? What is available that we just don't know about that needs to be coached up? And Coach Rhule, again, made it a point to say, look, we don't know what we don't know. We haven't talked to these guys. We haven't coached them yet. I mean, right now it's winter conditioning. So kind of toss some of the labels away with this position group's bad. So a little bit more from Rhule here on filling out this roster, and really good job of hustling here in short order by the Nebraska staff.
I think we all have to be very careful about talking about, well, they're really bad at this position, because these kids are still 18 to 22. They're not NFL players, right? So they're developing. So I can't comment on positions yet. Because I haven't coached them. You know, I think after the spring, like I said, I think there's probably a lot of guys. Like, I have two guys that played for me in college that are playing in the Super Bowl, Hassan Reddick, and he's gonna play edge, what they call edge now, outside backer, DN. He didn't come to college as an outside backer. I have Sean Bradley, who unfortunately is on IR right now, but he's a linebacker. He wasn't a linebacker in high school. So some of the real magic that I think good staffs do is they find the right position for players. Like, hey, you know what? You're a good DN, but I think you could be a great tackle. You're a good outside backer, I think you could be a great fullback maybe. So I think that's part of our magic. In terms of scholarship numbers at positions, we're still not where I would want to be on the O-line. I'd like to always be at 16 scholarship offensive linemen. Watching some of the non-scholarship O-linemen move, they look like scholarship O-linemen at places I've been, but I haven't seen them play, so I have to watch. But that's one area probably to me. We're probably, obviously we're over on scholarships right now. There's so many new rules now that allow you to do some things to get there, so we'll work on that as we go. We've kind of remade the team. And I think the team that's here, they're remaking themselves in the weight room right now. A lot of guys look significantly different to me just after a couple weeks.
Let's go to the phones real quick. Paul with us here on Hail Varsity Radio. Paul, go ahead. Thanks for calling.
Hey, guys. Our big worry when they announced the coaching change here to Matt Rhule was losing Bill Bush and Coach Joseph and Coach Applewhite. And the thought was that you needed an ace recruiter, and those guys really seemed to have recruiting down. Well, now we've seen the recruiting class that Rhule and his staff, that doesn't really include anyone other than Rayola from the old staff. What do we think?
Well, they're thorough, right? And they've got a fit and a system, and they have an identity. They want speed, and they want athleticism. And Rhule touched on why he kind of leans towards track athletes. It's a mentality standpoint. So
sure.
I think Bill Bush is still an incredible recruiter. I still think Mickey Joseph's a phenomenal recruiter. And I think Applewhite's damn good as well. So,
but I think people may have been just underselling this Husker coaching staff in terms of their recruiting acumen, because they go out and work hard, and that's probably what 75% of recruiting is, going out and working hard and building those connections, building those relationships. It comes down to hard work, like almost anything else in life.
Here's the thing as far as the breaks on, man, it would have been nice to have the three former guys on staff. You've seen what they've done, right? And yeah. I know Baylor, I know there's a lot of NFL guys from Temple, but you had it kind of in your face with the history of Bush, of Mickey, and Applewhite. Applewhite still has a couple running backs, right, on the roster here. So
for sure,
that was the pause. I think the work that's being done and the evaluation, we'll see. It's never an exact science with recruiting, but between the development and their mold, I think it can work okay.
Do we think that we're getting the highest quality of standout athletes?
I think
we got a bunch of three stars in this class. I know the stars oftentimes don't mean crap, but it is what it is.
A lot of the four stars that were brought in beforehand never materialized either. Yeah, so
they never stuck around, and maybe they were overrated.
You never know. I mean, that's just the thing, is I think Rhule will do everything he can to get guys to stick around and get them better. Paul, up against it, thanks for the question.
Thank you.
Thanks for the phone call. Mike Babcock's on the way with Hail Varsity.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Coming up here in about 30 minutes or so, Russ Hochstein, thoughts on Tom Brady, his teammate, longtime friend, and retirement 2.0 for TB12. More from Matt Rhule here coming up on signing day. Mike Babcock with us, historian, author, Hall of Famer, our own GOAT with Hail Varsity. Babbers, signing day is officially in the books. 11 portal, 28 high schoolers, and a new staff that put a lot of miles on between Omaha, Lincoln, and everywhere else in the other 91 counties. Your take on this staff, to kind of piggyback off our caller, Paul, what do you think of this staff and their recruiting? I know 2-3 years down the road, we'll have the answer. But on the surface right now, what's your reaction to this recruiting haul for Nebraska?
I liked how aggressive they were.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the fact that they looked for players that they thought fit their system, rather than just looked at how many stars does this guy have. The anecdote today about the driving along and calling up the coach and stopping and getting the player was kind of running under the radar. I think that's reflective of what I think this staff is doing.
We froze Babbers. It was going to be incredible.
He just disappeared.
Do you have us back?
We all turned into circles.
Uh-huh.
Which I look better as a circle.
You know what? Either that or we're at a Grateful Dead show, Babbers.
I just think the approach is the right way. Now, and the emphasis on development, because I think in Nebraska, that's what you have to do. That, you know, that's part of it, I think. And to be committed to that, I think, is very important for a coaching staff.
Mike, what do you just make of how Matt Rhule has been handling his first couple press conferences since becoming Nebraska's head coach? Every single time I come away just feeling impressed. He seems like a guy who gets Nebraska, and I think that is reflective of the amount of work he did before taking this job, researching Nebraska. I don't want to say he's saying what the people want to hear, but I feel like he has a plan in place, and he's able to articulate his plan in a way that's going to keep Husker fans happy.
I think research is the right word, Elijah. And, you know, I agree. I don't think he's saying what Nebraska fans want to hear. I think he's saying what Nebraska fans should hear, which is reflective of the research that he's done beforehand. And, you know, he's very articulate. He's a good public speaker. That's obvious. He's a very engaging guy. And, you know, I think that reporters relate to that. And he seems to be very open about things. I've been impressed when I've had the opportunity to listen to him, because, again, I think he's done his research. I think he understands as well as you can in the short period of time what Nebraska is all about. And I think he's approaching his coaching in accordance with what it has determined is the Nebraska way of doing things and what the atmosphere is here.
Mike Babcock with us from HaleVarsity.com and Magazine. Get your subscription today, the print edition, the digital, of course, content, incredible. HaleVarsity.com/offer is where you go. Mike, as we put it together, concerns for you, or do you think it'll get managed the right way when we talk roster numbers? He didn't really have an answer for that. He's going to coach during the spring and then figure it out. But you look at the scholarship numbers that currently exist versus what you're allowed to have.
Well, Brady Oatman's kind of explained this to me. I was a little bit confused about how this works with the numbers thing. Apparently, it's a situation where you get through spring, and then you look at it and you say, okay, we'll help certain guys make transfers if it looks like they're in a situation where that would be in their best interest. In other words, they're probably not going to fit into this 85 scholarship limit or whatever you have. The other thing is, as I understand it now, there's a sort of a change in the way these things work. So if a student athlete is in a position at the end of spring practice to where it doesn't look like he's going to fit into the system and he's going to be part of the program, he can still remain a student and have the benefits that he would have had as a scholarship student athlete. He just wouldn't be part of the team in that sense anymore. So I think that, to me, that's kind of the way it probably always should have been, is that this student can have the opportunity to remain a student, because I think you have to still emphasize that. And that's one of the things that I was impressed with Coach Rule today. Student athlete, it's not athlete, it's student athlete. And you can't dismiss that part of it. And apparently the rules have been adjusted to accommodate that if that student athlete doesn't find another school to transfer to a program where he might be comfortable.
Yeah, and that was utilized by Lincoln Riley last season with USC. That was kind of the first big-time usage of that rule that we saw, where I think he got 10 to 15 guys off his roster that way by saying, you know what, you guys can remain students at USC, remain on scholarship, you get all the benefits, you get the dining hall, you get the mental health services, you get the tutoring, anything you want, you're just not a part of the team. And a lot of schools have, I think, taken note of that. And I wonder what Matt Rule's method is going to be with that, because he did say he doesn't want to do that in his introductory press conference. He said he didn't want to be a guy who's removing guys off scholarship and kicking them off the team, or not kicking them off the team, but you get what I'm saying, taking a spot that was theirs and giving it to somebody else. But that's the way the world works, I guess, Mike, with college football nowadays, that at the end of the day, you have to be below 85. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. So sometimes you have to make some hard decisions.
Yeah, I think that's right. And again, they'll also have the ability to help student athletes look for other programs where they might be able to fit in the transfer portal, utilize the transfer portal to their advantage in that sense. But yeah, you're going to have to make some difficult decisions, because that ceiling on the number of scholarship athletes that you have, student athletes that you have, isn't going to change. So you've got to meet that. And as you're changing the system and you're trying to develop players, there are going to be some that don't fit into this system. And that, they're probably going to realize that. They're probably going to be the ones that come and say, hey, can you help me in the transfer portal? Can you make some recommendations, make some phone calls or whatever it might take to get those student athletes in a good position?
Mike Babcock is with us from Hale Varsity. Mike, before we get you out, bud, going to get your thoughts on Nebraska-Illinois last night. I know the streak's now at 4 for Husker Hoops. They were right there, didn't have a great finish to it. I know there's been some inconsistency. There's been more turnovers than you like. There's just a lot of resolve, though, with this basketball team, and I don't know if it'll get better Saturday or not against Penn State, but they were right there. Didn't quite get the cover, Elijah, but man, they gave Illinois a lot of what they didn't want for much of the evening.
Yeah, you know, the first half looked good, and the second half caused me to have some discussions with my television about some of the things that happened there, but specifically the turnovers. There were like, what, 14 or 15 turnovers in the second half, mm-hmm. and things just kind of fell apart. I mean, it's been kind of a scenario for Husker hoops. The men's hoops is that, you know, they'll have a stretch where they play really well, and then all of a sudden everything kind of comes undone. And it kind of hurt that Derek Walker got five fouls and fouled out. You know, I don't think he gets quite the, you know, Fred Hoiberg made the comment about officials and you know, maybe how he got treated compared to some of the more high-profile players in the conference. The second half was just a disappointment, because I really thought that the Huskers were in a position where they could pull the upset.
Mike, have you shifted your focus to baseball season just yet? Or are you still, invested in this Husker basketball team as it stands right now?
I'm still paying attention to basketball. I gotta take a look at baseball, and I see there's a news conference with baseball and softball coming up next week. I gotta catch up here, because there's a lot of new faces on the baseball team too. That's going to be a whole new situation. And I saw the rankings of baseball writers, the baseball writers rankings. There are only two Big Ten teams that were even got any kind of mention, and Nebraska wasn't it. And that was the top 40 or something like that. I mean, it's so that's probably a good sign, because when Nebraska wasn't highly ranked two seasons ago, you win the conference and then you are highly ranked and you don't get in the top seven or eight. So
Will Bolt seems like the type of coach that can take that and turn that into motivation. The fact that, you know what, everyone's sleeping on you. You're 2 years removed from a Big Ten championship, and now people want to write you off.
It's also a dogfight to get a roster spot. I mean, they have more kids than roster spots available right now. I mean, that's a reality.
Right. It's going to be competition for sure. And you're right. That's Will Bolt. He'll develop and he'll push them to be the best they can be. There's no question about that.
Mike, what's coming up from you and the crew at Hail Varsity here this week?
You know, we're planning out the next issue of the magazine and coming up pretty fast. So got to get some stuff. I think we're going to have a softball feature that Drake's doing. I think we're still working on maybe what the other main feature is going to be. But, it comes around quickly. And doesn't seem like it once a month. Doesn't seem like a big deal, but it comes around pretty fast. So
I say that about my rent every single month, too.
It hits you. Matt Hansen asking, 18 turnovers. Yeah, they finished with 18. They had, 15 in the second half. They made a few field goals, 19 points, 15 turnovers. Was absolutely. And good old Fred's going to lose it here at some point if the refereeing keeps being as inconsistent as it's been, not just for Nebraska, but league-wide, has been kind of a nightmare this year. Babbers, we'll check in with you next week. Thanks for giving us some time today, bud.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
There he is, Mike Babcock with us. HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Some more thoughts from Coach Rhule, signing day 2.0, and then reaction and reflection on his friend Tom Brady from Russ Hochstein, former Husker and New England Patriot, Chief, and Denver Bronco. Hail Varsity continues. Like what you hear? High quality radio and podcast is part of what we do at Hail Varsity. Hey, it's Chris Schmidt with Hail Varsity Radio, and I wanted to offer listeners of the Hail Varsity Radio Show podcast $10 off the price of an annual subscription. That means that you can get everything we do. 10 issues of our monthly magazine, our annual football yearbook, and all the premium content we produce at HailVarsity.com. Just go to HailVarsity.com/subscribe and enter in the promo code GBR for $10 off a full year of Hail Varsity. That's hailvarsity.com/subscribe, promo code GBR.
Chime in 402-466-ESPN or email the show, Chris at HaleVarsity.com.
Just try me. Try me.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Big thanks to Mike Babcock. The interview with Babbers, thoughts on the signing class, and Husker football. That'll be posted Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, and also on the Hail Varsity YouTube channel. Full show or snippets of the show, different segments for you. And you can check that out, subscribe, and follow for sure. So, Georgia, been on our mind as Nebraska folks who cover Nebraska football and you Nebraska fans with the influx of guys that have won national championships. So, in some cases, back-to-back championships. Rule was asked about that Georgia connection at signing day today, part of the portal infusion here for the Big Red.
Yeah, obviously they played till late, so they had a limited window because those guys all went into the portal after, except for Eric, after it was over with. But yeah, you know, Fran, as I get older, guys who've coached for me now go on. Like, Fran was, a GA, then a position coach, and now he's really one of the top assistants in the country, should be a head coach, and will be a head coach. And, as guys were going in, hey, coach, this is a guy that fits you. He kind of knows how I am, the way I want to do things, the process that we'll want to have, the character of the guys that we want, the work ethic. So he was able to tell me about them and then also tell them about us and what we're doing here and then kind of let us recruit from there. A guy like Eric, Jake Peets, who I worked with, was a Nebraska alum. He had had him at LSU, so, or had gotten there as he was leaving LSU, so even guys that had played with some of these guys who played, I coached in the NFL, were able to kind of speak on them. So I think a big thing is, as you bring transfers in, is why are they transferring? Why do they want to be here? And I think all those guys, to me, they're really good players, and they have a chance to help us. But they also have the right mindset to play, at Nebraska.
Jake Peets is going to be will be a major unsung hero for Nebraska football if this thing pops with Rule. If Nebraska's back on track, winning 8, 9, 10 ball games a year, because Jake Peets is a trusted voice for Matt Rule, and Jake Peets is a guy that's done NFL time for sure, but also the former walk-on from O'Neal. So Peets is somebody that is really trusted by Rule, and that's a similar connection, right? Well, we had this freshman tight end that was incredible that we got the ball to for 500-some yards or close to and handful of touchdowns. Here's the pros, here's the cons, and go get him. More on tight end Eric Gilbert, and we're excited for his ability to watch a dude like that perform at tight end, but there's a lot more to just than playing for Nebraska. Coach Rule spent some time on Eric Gilbert today.
Yeah, I just think, he's as talented a player as there is. Okay, so he's a player. What we want to do is, like with all of our players, I want him in 10 years to say his life is better for having played for us at Nebraska, right? That's all I care about with all these guys. So what that means for him, I'm just getting to know him. I want him to have elite success in the classroom. I want him to go be involved in the community. I want him to have great relationships, and I want him to go play well in football. If Eric gets on the field for us, the football for him comes naturally, but we're going to push him to be the best that he can be. And so I think there's a lot of talent there, but with a lot of these guys, there's a lot of talent. We just have to harness it and help them develop it, get them on the field, get them to trust us, and then turn them loose.
Do you think trust is a hard, you got to earn trust clearly, but is Rule a guy that guys that are the holdovers, Elijah, you think they're going to have a hard time trusting him? NFL background, you've got, and listen, he's not done anything to dissuade that trust. He's just new, and sometimes new is different, and it takes a little while to warm up to.
Well, it's a process, but Ever watch Survivor? I've seen people gain trust with people they've never met before in their life, don't know anything about their backstory, and they're building trust with them within 5 days. And I understand Survivor is not the real world. Survivor is not college football. But, like, just because of somebody's background doesn't mean you can't trust somebody. It all comes down to somebody's actions matching their words. And over a repeated portion of time, you build that trust with somebody whenever they continue to have their words match up with their actions. And I don't sit here and say, oh, well, these guys are coming from a new staff, so they're not going to trust Rule, or Rule's an NFL coach, so they're not going to trust Rule. It's a case-by-case basis, but, like I literally go back to Survivor, and I say, if people can trust the other Survivor contestants, who the whole point of the game in Survivor is to go out and backstab people and win it all for yourself, like, and they're trusting these people after 5 days, so it all comes down to a case-by-case basis.
Listen, you hit it, and it's actions and words, and they've been pretty much in lockstep since he's been here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that shows a lot for, you know, guys that are holdovers, because you're going to need a lot of those guys. A big thing to me is that you've had no departures from the offensive line. And hey, that a lot of that has to do with Coach Donnie. A lot of that has to do with retaining him. But they would not have settled, especially in that spot. The good news is there's five guys that have coached offensive line on this staff, along with your still your offensive line coach. So I think the topic of trust is something that's very real. It's focused on, it's talked about, and it's earned, because those actions are demonstrated on a day-to-day basis. I mean, a lot of times Rule talks about when the camera ain't on, right? Or when no one's looking, and that's just it. Everyone's got your own different alter egos. I get it, but it seems like there's some consistency, and you need to have consistency with your head coach.
Well, let's also remember that trust is a two-way street. It's not just about the players being able to trust Matt Rhule. It's about Matt Rhule being able to trust these players as well. And right now we're in the process of Matt Rhule just trying to get to know these guys. These guys just trying to get to know Matt Rhule. He talked about it today. He's like, I'm trying to learn the names of 150 new dudes while I'm on the recruiting trail. And I have to ask these guys their names, like, for the first month. Like, hey, whenever you come up and talk to me, make sure you give me your name, because I gotta learn that first. And that's, I guess, one of the things that you don't even think about is the fact that, you know, he's had a month on the job, but that month on the job has been spent trying to build this roster and trying to go out and find kids, and you still have those kids at home. So, I mean, a month into this, there could be a lot of trust built up. There could be no trust built up. I mean, it's no inside information from me here, but it's a two-way street of Matt Rhule has to learn to trust these guys in addition to these guys learning to trust Matt Rhule.
Sure. No, it's not one way. I mean, it just doesn't work that way. More from Rhule here, specifically the topic of hard work. And I think Nebraska fans have appreciated the effort put in. And Rhule was the first to say that's kind of our job.
It's not easy to work here. The standards are high. Like, you guys have done a really nice job making a big deal about Ed going around. And I think Ed's doing what we've always done. Like, going to 8 schools a day in the state of Nebraska is the bare minimum. We're not doing something special. We're not like, oh, wow, look how hard they work. We're just doing our jobs. We're showing up and doing our jobs. Stopping at a high school and them having a cup of coffee, and the special education, special needs students are giving away coffee and taking a picture with them, that's called being hardworking. And the people of Nebraska work way harder than us. That I know. I've been to some small towns. I've been to the cities now. I've seen people in the state. You guys work hard. So we're not going to celebrate ourselves for working hard. We're going to celebrate ourselves for having a purpose where we're trying to help young people have better lives. That's really what's important. The working hard is because we want to win too.
Good explanation there. Final thoughts from Rhule, hour one. Russ Hochstein on Tom Brady next hour. And Evan Bland will be with us on Hail Varsity.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
One final time this hour, it's Hail Varsity, presented by Currency. For all your equipment financing needs, go Currency, and be sure to buckle up. This winter, using your seatbelt saves lives, prevents injuries only if properly worn. Buckle up, a message from the Nebraska Department of Highway Safety Office. More from Coach Rhule, signing day 2.0. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel. Can find us on Twitter at @Schmidt_radio. Give us a follow, or at Herbal Essence for Elijah Herbel. Find the Hail Varsity Radio Twitter handle as well, at @HVarsityRadio. So We talked about the topic of trust and how that seems pretty good right now. Even though it's winter conditioning and it's not spring ball yet, I think you're going to get asked and answered pretty straight shots from the head coach and every time he's been in front of us. And it's been a whirlwind, right? I mean, you've had Bo, you've had Riles, you've had Frosty, now you have Matt Rhule, and there seems to be a sincereness. Now, the guy's great at talking, but he's absolutely been pretty nails with how he wants to go about it. Will it translate to wins and success?
And I liked what Mike said about Matt Rhule, where he's not saying what Husker fans want to hear, saying what they deserve to hear. I really like that take from Mike, and mm-hmm. that this is what Husker fans want to hear, but it comes from the research, and it's not a lip service type thing. I think is the point of what Mike is trying to get there, is it's not lip service what Matt Rhule is telling us when he gets in front of the media. It's just a guy who's well prepared. He did his research, and you know what, he understands the type of team and the type of program the Husker fans want, and he's here to execute his plan in a way that aligns with what Husker fans want to see. And I guess that's a trust thing with fans. Is are you trusting what Matt Rhule is saying? And that's going to be proven on the field. His words line up with his actions. And if they do, I think Husker fans are going to be very, very happy with this hire because, I mean, he says all the right things. Mm-hmm. And now the question is, can he go execute all those things that he's saying?
Sure. And that's a process to get that execution and the mentality. He hit on both the process and the mentality here as they move forward.
I think one of the things I'm trying to teach the team, because sometimes we can always be very outcome-based, like, I want to go to a bowl game next year. And it's like, oh, just worry about today. The other thing is, you know, I worry about the team, and I'm going to worry about these guys. Just if everybody just gets 1% better every day, if the best way to improve the team is to improve yourself. So that model of, hey, just improve yourself, and then other people will follow you. So, like, if quarterbacks are going to have voluntary throwing on their own, and they show up 5 minutes early and they're prepared, and then that will have an impact on everybody else. What we don't need is a bunch of guys, like, we don't need every highlight video with people talking, right? We just need people doing. Christian McCaffrey said something to me great one time. He said, you know, we just need to play loud. Like, everyone wants to talk, just play loud. And so the quarterbacks, to me, they can just be serious about themselves, academically, athletically, and in the community. They can be the same guy behind, when the coaches aren't around, as when the coaches are around. And that sends a real message to the team. And then, you know what, when they know everybody's name on the team and they know the people that work in the cafeteria's names, and then they become someone that people want to follow. And so I like the group. You know, we have a couple guys that won't be able to do spring because of their shoulders, right? You know, Logan and Casey won't be able to do that. There'll be a time here soon where we'll start working on football. They've got to learn a lot of X's and O's and a lot of different things. But right now I just want them working on themselves. Invariably, they have enough charisma that people will follow them.
Good take on the quarterbacks. I like that tag, playing loud. Guy who played louder than his draft status, Tom Brady. The GOAT retiring. His teammate and dear friend, Russ Hochstein, next. Hail Varsity Hour 2, presented by Currency. Hey, it's Schmitty. Want to tell you about a fantastic opportunity to work for a rapidly growing company that also enjoys the benefits earned with having competitive, stable history of work over 20 years? FSC. The FSC Edge, it's a leading technology innovator serving governmental agencies. Expert services helping worldwide patent offices meet strict processing and publishing timelines while delivering exceptional quality. They support some of the world's largest patent offices throughout the U.S. and Europe. That includes the European Patent Office, the German Patent and Trademark Office, and the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. The only group of companies worldwide to provide such support to all three of these agencies. Working at FSC, you have a chance to work with fun people with great attitudes and learn about patents. You're not on the phone, you're not customer-facing, it's casual dress, and the work environment, it's a new environment with over $2 million in improvements. You have access to generous benefits packages, company support for health and wellness, and you do impactful work on a national scale. Make a difference. Their team's constantly growing, and they're always looking for new people to join their mission. Check out what's available today at fscedge.com.
Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back into it, it's hour two. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by Currency. For all your equipment financing needs, go Currency. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel, and Husker standout and two-time Super Bowl champ Russ Hochstein back with us. Russ, we end up talking with each other quite a bit this time of year, either for Super Bowls or retirements. The topic today, retirement, and your dear friend Tom Brady hanging him up. Do you believe, Russ, that this is for good?
Well, it's a great question. It's a loaded question to start with, but I would never say never. I listened and watched the same Twitter feed that you guys did, and he seems pretty genuine, and you just never know. But, you know, he's already been through it once, and now this would be the second time. I would have a hard time believing that he's not really retiring, and I think he's done once and for all. I don't think he wants to come back and be compared to any other quarterbacks that have done it multiple times. So I would assume he's done for good, and we will see where he ends up.
How's he going to take that?
I don't know. It's you know, I'm a former player, and when your day is done, and mine was many years ago already. It's weird because you've had such a structured life for so many years, and then you now have all this time and this ability and some money to go do some things that you want to do. So I hope he enjoys it. I hope he takes a little time away and enjoys it all. I understand there's a pretty nice contract laying out there from Fox to get in the booth or to help him in the sports talk world or sports TV world. So it looks like he's kind of got somewhat of a future planned out for himself, but who knows? You just never know, and I just wish him the best. It's a sad day. He is the greatest of all time, and it's any time a great retires, it hurts a little bit. It takes away from the game just a little bit, and maybe opens the door for the next talents to come in.
Russ, tell me about that moment of realization for you that, you know what, it was time to hang up the cleats, it was time to end the playing career. Was it a long walk on the beach like Tom Brady?
No. Mine was not. Mine was, you know, I had already played and completed 12 years in my career, and I kind of came to the realization that I was 35 going on to 36, and to go through another training camp. Back in the days when we actually hit a little bit more than they do currently, it was a lot more physical back then as far as getting to training camp. And when you get older, that gets a little bit harder. A lot of maintenance on the body, a lot of time in the training room and the weight room to the older you get, the harder you have to work to stay on the field. And that gets exhausting, and it takes away from a lot of things you do. And so, you know, I kind of came to the realization I didn't want to go to the 13th training camp, but I would have absolutely loved to have got a phone call after training camp at my age, somebody bring me in and let me be a swing guy for them and help them up front. But my phone calls never came, and probably, you know, you go about a month or two into the season, and you realize, well, I guess the phone's not going to ring. It's time to start planning out my future, and that's kind of when it really hits. And then the next stage is kind of figuring out what you want to do. There's also a little fear that comes into that, like, man, what am I going to do? And how am I going to, what, you know, who am I going to help? Who am I going to work for? What am I going to do? And things like that. But like anything, you got to deal with it step by step and kind of take it from there.
Russ Hochstein joining us, Hail Varsity Radio. A lot of playoff wins, two Super Bowls with Tom. And what's Tom like kind of behind the curtain? I saw a really good story today from a teammate's wife who worked in an animal shelter, and Tom would take his kids and they'd spend time with each week and work with puppies or dogs. So that was a family moment, which was really cool. You've had more camaraderie than most with teammates and in the Belichick kind of regime. So give us a peek into the personality of Tom. We see him one way on the field, and I would assume you see him that same way on the practice field, but away from the field, what's Tom like to be around?
Well, I mean, I think you just summed it up pretty well there. On the field, he was tenacious, and he's a great competitor and hated to lose. I think we all know that. It's well documented. Mm-hmm. And off the field, he is just one of us. I always felt Tom would talk to anybody that was around him in the locker room. There was no, hey, I'm better than you or anything like that. He was simply just kind of one of the teammates you had. And you joked around with, you played pranks with, you pulled pranks on. You had to be careful pulling a prank on a guy that had a lot more money than you because it could get really ugly for you. But with that being said, literally, you go out and have a beer with you and go out and have dinner with the O-line and be a part of all those things. And certainly in my era, I mean, that's obviously when he was kind of on his rise, or his ascension into greatness. And maybe changed a little bit later in his career. And it gets harder, too, you know, when you get older in the league and you get past that 10-year mark and you're kind of the old guy in the room. And what you want to do after practice and after games changes compared to what it was when you're in your 20s and you want to go out and have a little fun and hang with the guys, go catch a movie, things like that. Now you're married, you have kids, and you got a lot of different issues to deal with. So, I absolutely always looked at Tom as one of us and he was a band of brothers. He was just one of the greatest teammates I had. He was a great leader. He's a great example. I mean, you can look over his career, any young kids out there today listening, you can look at a guy like him, and he was a role model, and he acted that way. And he was very put together. He's very polished. You never really heard him get out of line in the media, off the field at all, or in much trouble. So, you know, you can't ask for a better role model in that situation. And just a great guy. I plan on hopefully someday being at his Hall of Fame induction. I'm pretty sure he's probably going to be in the Ring of Fame up here in New England. And I definitely know he's going to be in Canton. So hopefully I get to be around and give him a hug and a handshake and congratulate him, because it was a lot of fun to be with him on that journey. And obviously the memories and the wins we had here is pretty amazing.
I want to go into the pranks. Can you divulge anything?
They were good. They were good. Let's put it through that way. I don't want to give people bad ideas or good ideas and expensive ideas, but there was always some good ones. One of them involved somebody's vehicle in a parking lot with no tires on it when they came back from practice. So there's been some good pranks pulled over the years, and that guy's been in the middle of them. I tell you what, his teammates loved him for it. We all loved him for it, because you got to have a sense of humor. You know, in football, you always have to joke. You got to kind of embrace the misery along with all the celebrations that you have. And so keeping things lighthearted and fun was definitely part of Tom's game.
Well, if you're not going to give me any ammunition for pranking my roommates, Russ, let's switch gears a little bit and just talk about his career as a whole as you remember it. Let's say Tom's getting inducted into Canton and you're making a tribute video. Someone reaches out and says, Russ, give me the one trait from playing with Tom Brady that made him so great. What would your answer be?
Oh, determination probably comes to my mind more than anything. And I wasn't there, obviously, when he played in Atlanta, when he came back in the Atlanta mm-hmm. Super Bowl. But that is something we saw, in his younger years, all the way through the time, the 7 years or 8 years I played with him. Man, when he was on a practice field and in a game, the determination to win was always there. And it was, you could see it in his eyes, his temperament, his mood, his leadership. He hated to lose. I was watching some shows not too long ago about talking about Michael Jordan, kind of the same way, mm-hmm. Kobe Bryant, and all the greats, Tiger Woods. They hate losing. And he's obviously could be mentioned and should be in that group of gentlemen that I just mentioned. Just hated to lose. And it permeated him, and it spread to every teammate around him. You understood the situation you're in. He's there. We're going to do this. This is how we're going to do it. And bam. And he went out and did it and did it and did it. And, I mean, you look at his career, he was in 10 Super Bowls. I mean, that's unbelievable in the modern-day era in free agency to be in 10 Super Bowls. He's got 7 championships, 5 Super Bowl MVPs. I mean, all the stats go with it, but it's just amazing to think that he was at the center of all of that over a, you know, until he was 45 years old is pretty amazing.
I just look at him and I look at the quarterbacks in the NFL and I was thinking, okay, what about San Francisco? Another year in Tampa. What about Vegas and McDaniel? What about New England, a reunion? He still can play at a high level. It's not what it was 3 years ago. And listen, I can't throw a football 20 yards in a spiral, so I'm not judging or knocking. I'm just saying at his age, you fall off. At all of our ages, you fall off a little bit. But still, with the right things around him, he can still go win a lot of ball games. I think he still has wins left in him.
Well, and my response is, it is pretty amazing. I heard somebody say this on this morning. Tom wanted to play until you just absolutely can't play no more. And the hardest thing about all of this is watching a great like him is he was slinging the rock all the way through this year. Mm-hmm. Yes, is he maybe a little more skittish in the huddle and doesn't want to get beat up and sacked a bunch of times? Yeah, maybe that changes over time. But man, when you watch him just throw a football, the pure throwing ability he still has and where he puts the ball and directs traffic and blitz pickup and those things, there's only maybe three or four guys in the league at this time that are also, by the way, 20 years younger than him that are even in his category. So it is still amazing to think he doesn't suck. He didn't play till his arm fell off, or anything like that. He just simply was still smooth old Tom, go out and could still win a game at any time. He threw for unbelievable numbers this year anyway. But it's the hardest thing for me is like, God, he's still got a lot. I always look at him as he's got so much left in the tank yet. Like, could he play till 50? And man, would it be fun to watch him with the toys they had in Miami and Vegas and San Francisco. It would be awesome. And I'd be front row and center to watch that happen. And I would love to see it, really would. And but you know what? It comes down to him, and none of us can speak for him. As we know, everybody individually has to make their own decision. But it would be fun to watch with all those receivers and tight ends that are around the league in those three teams. And even more than that, there's a lot of other teams that he'd fit really good on. But it's hard to watch a man walk away when you still look at him and think, I think he's got a lot left in the tank.
Russ, do you think Tom Brady's one of those guys that no matter what his next venture in life is going to be, it's going to be successful? You mentioned potentially heading over to Fox and becoming a broadcaster. I think, you look at him and potential football coach, quarterbacks coach comes to mind as another option. Is he just one of those guys that, you know what, he's got the Midas touch. Whatever he touches is going to turn to gold. And whatever he does with his next stage in life is going to turn to gold as well.
Well, I think he's very calculated, and I think he's very bright, as you know. I mean, he's a quarterback. He's not dumb. This guy knows what he's doing, and I think he's smart enough to put himself in a good situation that's going to help himself succeed. I have no idea if he'll be great in the broadcast booth. I've heard a lot of conversations today when I was driving on the road at Sports Talk Radio up here. Was like, oh, who's he going to, is he going to take over the number one spot right away for Fox and, where Tony Romo stands and all these guys. And whatever he does, I think he will be successful. I hope he is. I'm rooting for him. He's a friend of mine, and he has been so successful, so you just kind of naturally assume that. Here's one for you guys. Maybe you can start this rumor. I would love to see him being an owner of an NFL team. Wouldn't that be fun?
I think I think he probably tried to get partial owner. I mean, I don't know this, but I think it's Miami, honestly. No, Russ.
I know I heard all the same rumors and talk that you guys heard, and it has ever since I've heard that is fascinating because I've also heard similar things from a few other guys that are no longer in the league, but I just think that's absolutely fascinating. And watching what Elway did in Denver those years and signing some big name free agents and how you can turn a franchise around, I think he'd be really suited for that as well. But who knows? Mm-hmm. That takes a lot of work and time and commitment as well. And knowing him, he probably wants to be with his family a lot. And that takes time.
Russ, last thought before we say goodbye, and it's fun to get caught up with you. Nebraska, a new head coach, Matt Rhule, coming from the NFL. He's a big line of scrimmage guy. They really emphasize relationships. He said today at the presser that, we're doing our job getting out to high schools, but Nebraska's been visiting about every school, big and small. What's that mean to a small community when a Nebraska coach comes to visit and take part? Because I know you're a guy from a great community that that ended up playing high level football in Lincoln.
Oh, it means the world. You know, I think Matt Rhule's handling it really well. You know, getting out, getting in the smaller communities, being seen. You know, obviously your time is limited as a coach, so you can't just drive around for the hell of it and look at players. But I think he's probably got some kids that are targeted. There is a lot of good football played in small communities in Nebraska and Indiana and Kansas and Oklahoma, South Dakota, all of our states. And we're rural and very rural areas. And I think the notoriety, the name of kids doesn't always get out there like it probably should to help promote the kid. But I know in the modern day world, we're doing a much better job of that than even when I was there in the 90s. But yeah, absolutely, it means a ton to those communities. Communities rally around their players. And when you get to play in a rural, when you come from a rural community in Nebraska and go to the big town of Lincoln and get to play big time football, it is special. I lived it. I am so thankful for all those people who rooted for me. I still go back to my hometown. My family still lives there. I love it. I would love to do it more often than I am now. But it really does mean something, and it kind of galvanizes the entire state and helps bring on, you know, and keep that fan base strong.
Russ, we'll check in again soon. Thanks for your time today, bud.
Hey, thank you guys, and stay warm.
Pardon the interruption, but I'd like to save you some money. I'm Brandon Vogel, managing editor of Hail Varsity. I wanted to offer listeners of this podcast $10 off the price of an annual subscription. That means that you can get everything we produce, 10 issues of our monthly magazine, our annual football yearbook, and all of the premium content we produce at HailVarsity.com. Just go to HailVarsity.com/subscribe and enter the promo code GBR for $10 off a full year of Hail Varsity. That's HailVarsity.com/subscribe, promo code GBR.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Big thanks to Russ Hochstein, longtime Patriot, Bronco chief, friend, teammate Tom Brady, his take on TB12's retirement. Let's get back to Nebraska football signing day and more insight from Coach Rhule today. We say hi to Evan Bland, Omaha World Herald, at Evan Bland, OWH. Evan, how we doing?
Hey, yeah, you go from Russ, who's an NFL, you know, guy, to an intramural basketball all-star here, so it's a little bit of a shift.
You know what? Shifts are okay, right? The old shift that worked on Mo Vaughn all those years. We'll keep it with the Boston flavor.
Let's be clear here. An intramural all-star is a big deal. Like, what position are you rolling with, Evan? You a post presence? You a point guard? You a shooter? 3-and-D type guy? What are you?
You know how you hear about, like, those guys who are guards and then they grow up and they, you know, have the size and the ball handling? I was kind of the opposite. I grew early. And so I kind of was a post, and then everyone else caught up with me, and I still was sort of a post. But, you know, I settled probably into a one of those three or four
type spots. So you're like
a
Sam Griesel type that, you know what, you got the size more of a point guard or a shooting guard, but you're going to be much more willing to go post up these defenders than most other guards?
Yeah, you know, I kind of had the old man YMCA game going, like, before my time, you know, backing down a guy or being a little wily in the post. So I had to incorporate some like, smarts, because the talent, like, the athleticism was merely average or probably a little below. So, yeah, you know, you just have to pick your spots and contribute and know your strength, and that was kind of my role.
Well, what do you think Matt Rhule's strength is right now?
Well, you know, it's funny. You hear stuff out of Carolina and their owner saying that they made a mistake in hiring a CEO coach in Matt Rhule. I think that's exactly what he is at Nebraska, and that's exactly what he was hired to be. And, you know, you hear him again at the press conference today, and he's just a guy who has his fingerprints on everything, like, to the point, and you saw this today, Chris, like, they rearranged the chairs at the press conference at the stadium because, you know, it looks better and it makes more sense for cameras and things like that. So this is a guy who, you know, has a big picture vision and a clear idea of how he wants to go about things, but he's also extremely detail-oriented, all the way down to that little stuff, you know, in the stadium today. We heard all sorts of stories about how they compiled this class, and I thought that was pretty notable. I mean, you get beyond just the sheer number of it, 39, 28 high schoolers, JUCOs, 11 transfers. And a lot of it comes down to those little details, right? Like making that extra phone call, which is really how they ended up landing DeAndre Barnes, the defensive back out of the Denver area. The two Arlington Martin kids, Jeremiah Charles and Ismael Smith Flores. Yes, they had the connection with Bob Weger, but they made that connection before he joined Nebraska's staff as tight ends coach. So it's just a staff, that's clearly cohesive. All the coaches we've heard from have talked about the family aspect. Matt Rhule spoke today about how, by his count, now there are 14 people within the program in some capacity who played for him at different stops. So I think, those would be the two things to me is an adherence to a vision, a really specific vision, and then just the cohesiveness among the staff and how they, to a man, have gone out and executed this thing after 2 months.
I mean, you got to put down public speaking as a strength, though, too, right?
Sure.
Well, yeah, pure ability, yes, absolutely. And he tends to make that joke at some of his stops about being the son of a preacher man. And, I don't know how much of that ability is inherited or how much you just kind of grow up learning and watching, dad do his thing. But there's no doubt, I often think back to what Trev Alberts said a few months ago when they were talking about a prospective hire and saying you don't have to win the press conference. And that's true, but he has. He continues to lay out visions and be thoughtful. And, if he can do that with 20 or 30 media types and in front of big crowds, he can absolutely do that in recruits' living rooms. And I think we've seen that certainly in the guys that I've spoken to who've committed in the last month or so. They've just been impressed with him. And in some cases, you have to make that impression quickly, right? I mean, in terms of the early signing period last month and now the traditional one today. In a lot of these cases, these are players who didn't know Matt Rhule or his staff beforehand, and so he has to be genuine, he has to make a case, he has to be convincing, and judging by the size and some of the upside that these guys have, I think it's pretty safe to say he's been both of those things.
Evan Bland with us from the Omaha World Herald. Signing day thoughts, Matt Rhule's presser today, and I was kind of wowed where he let a lot of us in the room know about the why and kind of a twist on what we normally talk about with complementary football, right? The offense, the defense, special teams. But he went further down the well with it in a really good way that I was impressed with. But it sounds to me like, again, back to the minute details, I mean, that is going to win you games in the Big Ten, Evan, and he's all about teaching that.
Sure, and I think the question was sort of hinting at this idea that, you're going to maybe want to hold the ball a little longer in offense to protect your defense. But, yeah, I mean, to your point, Chris, he took it in the direction of guys understanding fully about the game, understanding, if you're just running down the field for a breakaway score, yeah, you might be celebrating at the crowd, but more than that, you should be pointing to your lineman who sprung you loose. Or if you get a sack, you should understand in the moment that it's probably because guys on the back end were doing their thing and covering and things like that. So, yeah, I think it speaks to just the culture of everything that's going on. And I mean, he took it off the field too. He mentioned, even just with the lunches that they have, there's no more taking your box lunch and heading out and checking off, your name off the list. Like, you stay in the cafeteria, you interact, you get to know your teammates, all those different things. So I thought the line that he gave about how, it doesn't really mean anything, but it means everything, sort of was true. And another thing he talks about is being 1% better every day. And if you take care of yourself and invest a little bit in the team, then the team gets better. I think that can be powerful. And if you see that lived out every day and you hear that message consistently, I can see how, teams at Temple, at Baylor bought into that and were better collectively. And that's something that Nebraska has missed for all of its facilities and support structure and highly rated recruiting classes. I think the culture piece and the consistency just in the day-to-day has been one of the things missing. And I think it's something clearly that Matt Rhule believes in and has been good at enforcing.
Yeah, Evan, it almost feels like culture is priority number one for Rhule. And do you think that's a product of of that was what was necessary at places like Temple and Baylor, that they needed the culture before you can start improving the talent? Or do you think that he's walked into Nebraska and has seen the talent and said, you know what, the talent is close. What this talent needs is culture. What's your read on why the culture is so important for Rhule, at least through the first month?
Well, you know, I think, first of all, that's what he's known. I mean, you look back at what he did at Temple and at Baylor, and it was very similar to how things have come together here. I mean, he made hires of people that he trusted, maybe former players. You know, he took a chance on some guys that he believed in from high school, the high school ranks, or maybe some sort of off the field personnel roles, and put them into on field roles because he believed in them. And so I think that's, in terms of the staff, certainly that's how he's brought things about. And, you know, the other thing that Nebraska hasn't had largely in the last 20 years is a coach who's come in and had sort of an established culture, right? Like, so many times there have been coaches who are either sort of learning on the job or were on the back end of their career. And, you know, I think Matt Rhule turned 48 yesterday. He's still a young man in terms of the head coaching profession. So he seems like he's in that sweet spot where he knows who he is. He knows what he wants his program to be about. And there's still that, you know, that youthful zeal to see what things can become and to believe that maybe his best days as a football coach are still ahead. And so, you know, we'll see how it manifests on the field, but it does feel like you take a guy who has the track record of strong cultures at different places, and you mesh that with the Nebraska support and the facilities and, you know, everything that we hear about the program as strengths. And it is. It's going to be really interesting because, you know, one of the things, in my opinion, certainly when you look back on the struggles of Nebraska football over the last 20 years, one of the big things has been a lack of identity. What is this program about off the field? What is it about on the field? It's changed so much, and it feels like having that firm foundation is just what this program needs to take that next step and get back into national relevance.
Evan Bland with us, Omaha World Herald, talking Matt Rhule, signing day presser today. Evan, real quick, is there a guy that you're intrigued by? You mentioned Barnes a little bit, but the four other kids that were late additions to this class to make up the 28 high schoolers.
Yeah, it's, you know, there were so many interesting stories in this class, and it's interesting in this particular cycle that they were able to add five more signees from the prep ranks. Most of these guys, I think with the exception of Demetrius Bell, didn't even have an offer until mid-January, and so Nebraska moved quickly on them, and that's, again, a strength to the conviction that Matt Rhule and his staff have with track measurables and speed and things of that nature. But, you know, I think Ismael Smith-Flores is fascinating to me, one of the Arlington kids. Obviously, his dad at Iowa was an All-American-type defensive end for them. You know, he has all the measurables you're talking about, too, the track speed and the explosiveness, as does his teammate Jeremiah Charles. But, you know, those guys are fascinating because it's such a pivot from what we're used to in recruiting now, where you're seeing guys in eighth grade, ninth grade, 10th grade get offers and then continue in their process. These guys are sort of old school throwbacks where, you know, maybe they were late bloomers. Maybe they didn't pop until after their senior years. And so it'll be fascinating to see if that translates into their college careers and what sort of hit rate we have there. But I do. I think a guy with the lineage that Smith Flores has and the explosiveness that he showed makes him a really interesting prospect early in his college career.
Evan Bland with us here on Hail Varsity Radio. Elijah and I were chatting about some of the senior film guys that were staples for some of Nebraska's better teams in the last 10 years. And that's a guy like Quincy Enunwa, Amir Abdullah, two names for sure.
Kenny Bell.
I mean, those were senior film guys that guys weren't sure on, but Nebraska sure hit on. So, yeah, getting back to that, trust in your eyes and being thorough is big. Evan, we'll catch up next week and talk some baseball. Thanks again for making time today.
You got it, guys. Thanks.
There he is. Good to hear from Evan Bland, Omaha World Herald. A Jock Doc on the way with Hail Varsity.
He's in his 30s. But sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by Currency. Time for a Jock Doc Wednesday, Nebraska Orthopedic Center. Dr. Brandon Seifert's with us. Dr. Brandon, the fairy tale and the Cinderella run of San Fran came to a crashing halt. Brock Purdy on the sideline, got hit, complete UCL tear, needs surgery. Let's talk about what it means for that right arm.
Oh, yeah, terrible, terrible injury for him. You know, just such a great season. It's been neat to see him play the way he has. So, you know, as we go back and kind of rewind here anatomically on the UCL or Tommy John type ligament, you know, essentially what this is as you think about the elbow, that inside part of the elbow, that ligament crosses across that inside part of the elbow. And that's what basically gives you your stability. So, for example, if you think about bringing your elbow towards your midline, and if you're to push your wrist to the outside of the body, that force is called a valgus force. And that's what basically applies stress to that area. Another good way to think about this is in your throwing arm, as you kind of have your arm cocked in that back position, starting to bring that arm forward. That's where you start to feel a lot of that stress over that ligament. So that's the area we're talking about. It sounds like, as you mentioned, you know, full thickness tear in the area sounds to be what they're reporting. You know, obviously, if this is non-dominant side, non-throwing side, you could, you know, make some arguments for not fixing this. But obviously, on your throwing side, a quarterback, this has to be something that needs to be fixed surgically to get them back where they were before.
Dr. Brandon, let's talk about repair versus reconstruction and what that means. You just repair. He could be back next year. Reconstruction, that's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, that's great. That's really something to think about. So good difference in the two. Repair means you go in and you basically sew the tissue back together that's currently there. Okay, so you're taking that damaged ligament, sewing it back together, repairing it. If you're going to do a reconstruction, that means you're going to bring in something different to replace that. So, for example, you could do like, you know, a ligamentous reconstruction, which is what we do for, you know, a true Tommy John injury. That's where you take a ligament from somewhere else, bring it into that area, and there's obviously a variety of techniques you can use to fashion that ligament in place to provide that essentially valgus support to the elbow. In his scenario, so as you kind of look at it, say, all right, how do you decide repair versus reconstruction? Typically, in these really kind of acute, very traumatic injuries, which is what this is, oftentimes you can go in and there's some really nice tissue left that you can go in and repair, sew back together, and essentially bring the damaged ligament back together, and it's your native tissue. Sometimes in those scenarios, depending on the quality of that tissue, you might have to supplement your repair by, you know, maybe adding a ligament on top of it. There's some other things we can use, which is actually kind of an all suture device called an internal brace that you can use to kind of back up your repair. On the flip side, if you get in there and obviously the tissue is not great, it's really destroyed, it's really thin, hard to bring back together, sew back together, then you have to venture into that reconstruction world where you bring in basically a ligament and utilize that to remake his interclavicular ligament.
Dr. Brandon Seifert's with us here. It's a Jock Doc Wednesday on Hail Varsity Radio. And Dr. Brandon, is that why I'm seeing some of this variance on Twitter of some people saying, you know what, this is going to be a 6-month recovery, others are saying 9-month recovery, and then some people even saying it's going to be a full 12 months for him to get back to where he was before the injury? And is that where that variance is coming from, just what type of surgery is going to be required and what kind of recovery that's going to be needed following the surgery?
Yeah, Elijah, that's a great question. So as you think about that, it's dependent on a lot of factors. So obviously there's going to be a ton of speculation on it. And so, you know, first thing you look at is exactly, is it repair versus reconstruction? Typically on the repair side, it's going to be, you know, sometimes a little shorter recovery. But also what probably makes the most difference here, fellas, is really what sport and what activity they're trying to get back to. So if you take somebody like, for example, that's a football player, wrestler, that's not basically a non-throwing athlete, they're going to make it back sooner just because those mechanics of throwing are so hard to regain. So your other folks that are not throwers, they're going to get back sooner. It could be 4 to 6 months, probably more on the six-month side. You start to venture into the throwing world, and then the game kind of changes. Even with repair versus reconstruction, sure, it might be shorter on the repair side versus reconstruction, but you're still looking at a long process. I would venture to say that it's going to be at least a 9 to 12-month process for him. And again, it's just those mechanics of returning back to throwing are so hard to regain. You have to basically retrain, you know, do that whole neuromuscular retraining program to retrain your brain about where the arm, shoulder, elbow is in space to learn how to put all that back together and coordinate it appropriately. So, yeah, I would venture 9 to 12 months is probably more an appropriate term. We all kind of have that figure in our mind about some of the baseball kids that go through the, you know, Tommy John surgery, the pitchers, and that can be, you know, 12 to 18 months. Probably not really the scenario for him, but he's a throwing athlete. So there's a chance that it could be longer than 12.
Dr. Brandon Seifert's with us, Nebraska Orthopedic Center at Jock Doc Wednesday. And we're talking Brock Purdy, his injury versus the Eagles, and that Tommy John surgery. So when we talk about his future being the throwing athlete, how big a rehab comparatively to other long-term injuries is this for a quarterback? You laid out some of the steps that need to happen, but could it be just a bump in the road, or is this pretty traumatic from a recovery standpoint to get back to what he's been?
Yeah, you know, honestly, with this being a throwing arm, it'll be a delicate process getting back. I wouldn't say bump in the road by any means. You know, it's so interesting as you look at these kind of injuries. You know, we're so used to talking about those chronic repetitive injuries leading to Tommy John, like a true Tommy John pitcher injury, which is kind of that chronic repetitive over time, gradual stretching process. Very different when you go to a traumatic scenario where you have this big injury, big contact injury, where you just kind of blow that whole ligament up. Very different in terms of that recovery. The hardest part with these, obviously there's the surgery side of it. The other part of it is regaining your motion. Elbows are very unforgiving when it comes to very high-level trauma in terms of regaining your motion and just the stiffness and the scar tissue that sets up there. So this will be a battle for him. Regaining his motion, I would say there's a chance here that he may not completely regain all of his motion, especially extension, but should be able to get him back to a functional level where, yes, he can go back and play and throw and hopefully regenerate that same kind of velocity that he needs to be successful.
Is there any worry in your mind, Dr. Brandon, that Brock Purdy came back into that football game on Sunday and threw a couple more passes? I think he was 4 of 4 following the injury. So he was still slinging the ball around. Is there any risk of further injury from that? Or is this something where it's going to be, you know, not comfortable to go throw a football, but it's not going to risk further injury?
Yeah, you know, typically on the throwing side, usually your pain becomes kind of that limiting factor. So if you're able to kind of manage the pain well and can still throw with it, probably not going to take this to a higher grade injury. I think the thing I'd be afraid of more, obviously you're playing, you know, professional football, is the hit, the contact part of it. You know, you land weird, somebody knocks you over, trip and fall. Those kind of things would be more worrisome for me in terms of that more higher grade injury you could go back to.
Dr. Brandon Seifert with us, Nebraska Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday, and Brock Purdy, our topic. Dr. Brandon, thanks for the insight today. Appreciate your time.
You bet, fellas. Y'all take care.
Good to spend time with Dr. Brandon and his take on Mr. Purdy. Get some final thoughts from Coach Rhule, signing day 2.0, and always enjoy sitting down with Russ Hochstein, longtime Patriot Husker standout and teammate of Tom Brady. Good perspective there. We'll say goodbye to a Wednesday next on Hail Varsity.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Sure to hit the podcast to hear from Russ Hochstein on Tom Brady and Mike Babcock on signing day, along with Evan Bland. Good stuff. Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, the full show or segments for you with Hail Varsity Radio and the Hail Varsity YouTube channel. Be sure to check out HailVarsity.com and Brady Holtman's, Aaron Sorensen, Drake, and of course, Jacob Padilla, the crew, Brandon Vogel, Mike Babcock, all their thoughts on signing day and the week that is to come, and finish out with Nebraska Athletics. So two names that are back, Xavier and Garcia Castaneda. Rule touched on those guys, kind of one of the final questions he answered regarding to roster specifics, and he's really not looking at them as portal returners, but guys that he's excited to learn about.
They didn't go in the transfer portal on me. They had done that before, so I had no real issue with that. Like I said, I'm going to take everything on a case-by-case basis. Jeff Nixon, who worked with me, was a high school teammate of mine, worked with me, and his son played on the team, called me about Xavier. I didn't know who Xavier was. And so I talked, I just met with him. I love Xavier Betts. And I don't love Xavier Betts because of who he is as on the football field, because that's what's wrong when people think you only love him. I love who he is as a person. I like getting to know him. I like that, you know, I appreciate it. He texted me happy birthday yesterday. Okay, that means something to me. Like, so I like who he is as a guy. I'm rooting for him. I'm anxious to see him kind of get back on the football field and do well in the classroom. So I'm anxious to not just give him a chance, but to be an advocate for him. You know, like my son's 18. I'm trying to figure out what he wants to do for the rest of his life. I want him to go places where they has people who they don't entitle him, they don't enable him, but they advocate for him. So we'll do that for Xavier. And then, you know, Isaiah, he just reached out, and I was like, yeah, let's give him a chance. Like, give everybody a chance, and then go through the spring, and then people are going to see the standards and how we do things, and they'll either decide that they want to do it or not. But they hadn't gone on the portal on me, so it really didn't affect me.
Fair enough. And two more wideouts to a busy wide receiver room.
And what I liked from that comment, what I took away from that was, well, I took away more than just this, but like, did you hear at the end where he's like, we're going to show people what our standard here is at Nebraska this spring, and you can interpret that as we're going to put these kids through hell this spring and see who really wants to be here.
Are you able to survive in advance, or are you out? Thanks for playing. You are off to a jazz show.
Yeah, up in Omaha.
Tell me about that.
Wynton Marsalis is
coming to Omaha.
Oh, nice.
You're going to go see Wynton, huh?
Yeah, so looking forward to it. My dad's going to pick me up, so I don't have to pay for gas money. That's great stuff. Picking
Look
me up directly
you.
From work. Yeah,
it's been a week for you.
I like jazz too. I'm not sure if you like jazz. I'm a jazz fan. I played in the jazz band back in the day.
Wow. And just judging me, you think because I'm not a Survivor guy, I don't like jazz. I took History of American Jazz.
As did I.
I love. That's all. It's pretty much a requirement, non-requirement for broadcasting students. And then I loved the Ken Burns jazz.
Oh, that's great.
Setup.
Well, has Ken Burns ever made a bad documentary?
No, well, probably. But I mean, the ones that have been on PBS have been pretty good. And I'll say this, like, I never thought like I'd go see jazz live. And I got to do that with my dad. I reference Kansas City and the Majestic all the time, and that's an old school throwback, old school steakhouse. Well, basement, they had a jazz club.
Oh, nice.
We had a few cocktails down there and said, I can't play the treble like that. How about you? So we'll be back tomorrow at 4 on Hail Varsity. We'll sit down with Amir Abdullah. Thanks.
A Huda Media Production.